Hello, I'm Ash, and this is the Fat Lip Podcast. On the morning of August 18th, San Francisco's Castro District woke to a naked statue of Donald Trump glued to the sidewalk. That statue was one of five that showed up suddenly in cities across the U.S. that morning. And later that day, we learned that the statues were an installation by an anarchist art collective called In Decline. The piece was called The Emperor Has No Balls, and indeed it had no testicles. It also had a very small penis, skin that was pocked and veiny, and a hanging fat belly. I did a short show a few days after these effigies debuted to voice my disgust at that public reaction. Shane Brody, though, a fat trans artist from Berkeley, California, made the incredibly courageous decision to wage a one-man protest. Shane went out to the Castro, to the very spot where one of those statues had been glued to the pavement, and he took his clothes off. Shane, a very shy, private guy, protested naked for 4 days. His was the only public protest of its kind, and Shane is on the phone with me today to talk about his motivations, response to his protest, and how we can all follow his lead.
Yeah, this whole thing, I mean, part of what I want to communicate, besides, you know, the Trump statue thing and the reactions, the terrible reactions that people had to the statues, which was the worst part of it to me.
Right.
I can ignore the statues, but I can't ignore my community.
Right.
You know, making fun of a body that's like mine.
Right, of course.
And then part of it for me is also, I'm such a private person that I've had to, it was kind of impulsive for me to go out to do my action. It felt like I was sort of pushed into it in a way. Because I'd heard about the statues online. I don't watch TV, and you know, I lead a very quiet life. So,
right.
You know, sometimes I'm just reading all day or doing some art or something like that. So I don't often, you know, talk to people on a day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed online that this was happening. People were having conversations about it. And when I saw a picture of the statue, it looked just like me, you know. And I saw people putting brassieres on it and pointing to the small depiction of a penis.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw kind of jokes going on the internet about small erections being taken down. That was, you know, from New York,
right.
Parks Department or something like that. And I was just shocked that basically kind of the whole country was just, you know, laughing at somebody that looks just exactly like me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard for a person like me to find community in the first place,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I'm queer, I'm trans, I'm an artist. And, you know, to see people in my queer neighborhood, in the Castro, people who would normally be allies of mine, the leftists. You know, I'm sure there were people from other parts of San Francisco, maybe even East Bay, that came into town. But these were people who would probably be allies to me.
Right.
But then here they were basically, you know, shaming who I am. And I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And then online, I saw people who are friends and friends of mine excusing that.
Yeah.
And when I brought up, hey, this is not cool by me, I feel like this really hurts me. Then they came up with all these logical arguments about it, rationalizing it,
mm-hmm.
and saying, oh, it's just art. Oh, just get over it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't listening to the impact that it had on me.
Right.
My real emotions about it, you know.
Right.
And whenever you ignore somebody's emotions about something, something is wrong. And it's just so important to listen to people when they say that they're being harmed, because they are giving you a gift when they say that.
Yeah.
and it's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know what to do, you know. So I just woke up the next day and I was like, screw it. I am just going to show my body and I'm going to dare people to look at me and say to me and that I'm a disgusting person. I dare them to do that.
Right, right.
And so I, you know, I'm an artist, so I always have tons of sketchbooks. Mm-hmm. You know, they're only partially drawn in. I have mm-hmm. a very, I'm very bad with buying sketchbooks when they're on sale. But so I got one of my sketchbooks that has really nice heavy paper, and I got one of my nice markers, and I asked somebody to take over one of my volunteer shifts where I volunteer every week. And I just saw her at the coffee shop and I was like, I might be arrested. And, you know, can you take over my my position today? And she's like, yeah, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm not going to tell anybody yet. But I just have to go into the city and I might get arrested. And so I just have to do it. And she's like, oh, okay, all right, well, everything's covered. Just do what you need to do. So I dropped my car off at BART. I took BART into the city. And along the way, I'd been thinking about manhood a lot because people keep making jokes about manhood.
Right.
And that manhood means a penis, basically, you know, which is like the, you know, maybe the adolescent joke version of what we think of as manhood.
Right.
Whereas myself as a trans person, as someone who used to be a woman and now lives as a man, I've really had to examine what manhood is about.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Really, and take responsibility for what being a man is in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The good stuff, you know.
Right.
There's good stuff about being a man in the world, and there's a bunch of crap, too.
Mm-hmm.
Crap that I have to take responsibility for. And so I've really tried to examine that in my life. And to have people, like, on the news or on the internet making jokes about manhood and just reducing it to a body part was really right. upsetting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So on the BART, I was trying to loosen myself up socially because, you know, I was about to do a protest and be out in public. So I talked to some people on the BART. I was trying to be as social as possible just so that I could relax a little bit.
Right.
And so I talked to a few men and I asked them, basically, I said, I'm going to ask you, I want to ask you a very uncomfortable question. And, you know, it might, and you're welcome to say no to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to make you feel uncomfortable, though. But I would really appreciate an answer, though. And all three of them said yes. You know, I really wanted to get their consent before asking them.
Right, of course.
I think that's really important. You know, because you just don't want to ask a stranger a weird question because that can be really not so great.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had been talking for a while, so it wasn't like I blurted this out. It was kind of at the end of our conversation. I asked them what, you know, basically what their manhood meant to them. And all three of them had no idea how to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
They said they were confused about manhood. They were unclear about it. Then one man eventually said, oh, I guess it's too small. And I was like, oh, can you tell me more about that?
Right.
So he was also reducing it to just a body part.
Right, of course.
Manhood. And so I asked him, you know, can you, you know, kind of expand on that? He said, oh, I'm just average, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, you're just like every other man's man.
Right,
I mean, most
right.
men are average, right?
Right.
I'm really small because I'm a transsexual person, you know, and I haven't had any surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no way, you're not transsexual. And I said, yeah, I am transsexual. I had to actually convince him.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of our conversation, though, I asked him if he could be my bodyguard because he was also going to the Castro.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually really afraid.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and why? why should I, as a queer trans person, be afraid to go into my own queer neighborhood?
Yeah.
Right. But I did. I felt very afraid. And then when I got there, the there were some drag queens and there were some sisters there. And there were also just some men in drag. And there were some leathermen and, you know, that sort of thing. So people were really dressed up. It was it was a Sunday afternoon. I think it was the tail end of a fundraiser. And so I walked up to them and I said, I'm about to do something, about to do a little protest about the Trump statue. And I'm going to get naked and I feel very afraid. And I was wondering if you could hang out for a bit to just make sure that I'm okay. And they didn't quite understand what I was talking about. And one of them said, oh, well, just give me a flyer and I'll put it up in my shop. And I said, oh, okay. Well, thank you anyway. So then I go to the spot. You know, I see the glue that's still embedded in the sidewalk.
Right.
And it's pretty obvious what it was. Kind of this brown stain right there on the otherwise gray sidewalk. And I kind of think about my Buddhist meditation practice, because meditation practice, you, at least for myself, I try to cultivate, you know, like centeredness and quietness and non-reactivity within myself so that I can then bring that into the everyday world.
Right.
So I tried to keep that in mind. I tried to think about the feelings I have in my body when that when I'm meditating. And then also I thought a lot about other performance artists that have taken off their clothes or been stripped of their clothes in various ways or have used their bodies as a message, like Yoko Ono in her cut pieces, performance artists, performance art pieces in the 1960s, for instance. I just took a art history class and we watched a film of that. And during it, she had been crying at the very end. People go up to her and they clip off small pieces of her clothing. And then people just continue to do that. And eventually she's crying very much. She's very dignified, but she's also crying. It's a very impactful performance piece. And I figured, you know, it's okay to be raw.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, this whole situation has made me feel very raw and very afraid in my own community. So I'm going to show them this rawness. And I was crying. And I just, I'm not somebody who tells people that I'm trans. If you're familiar with trans men, you would probably spot me because I, you know, I started transitioning well into adulthood, which I'm fine with. I am fine with the more feminine, curvy aspects of my body. I have no problem with that at all. But if you're savvy, you can spot me. But in general, I don't, you know, tell people.
Right.
And so, like, I have lots of friends that I've known for 10, 15 years who had no idea at all.
Wow.
And I'm just private, shy, introverted. And so I took off a sneaker. I had made my signs on the bus and on the BART and the Muni train, and somebody had seen one of my signs as I was making it. It was the one that said, I love my fat body.
Yeah.
And he looked down at me and he had just this most beautiful smile on his face. And I was like, all right, I am doing something here.
Right.
And so I took off a shoe and I started holding up my signs. And then I took off, you know, a sock and another shoe. I just kind of did it slowly. And I was, you know, pretty emotional about it.
Right.
But eventually I knew that, you know, I still had my shorts on. But I knew that the impact of what I was going to do wasn't going to be as great if I kept my, you know, clothes on.
Right.
And so I just did it. I pulled my pants off and I put them behind me. And I just tried to sort of steel myself for what the possible reaction might be. I was
right.
I was afraid of that. Interestingly, I did not receive very many negative reactions. In fact, lots of people were very interested in what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I think that they knew that my protest / performance was very heartfelt.
Right.
I'm a very heartfelt person. And I think that people noticed that. Mm-hmm. I think when they were across the street, maybe they saw me, but then they were like, oh, it's more than spectacle. This person is actually trying to communicate something here.
Yeah.
So a lot of tourists actually came up to me, which was really interesting. I think it really says something to how we think of the body in general here in America, because a lot of Americans were sort of very hesitant to approach me.
Right.
They did. Some people did eventually, which was great. In fact, people were very considerate. They would ask me if they could take my picture, and I would say, yes, of course, and please put it on social media. It's the reason why I'm doing this.
Right.
You know, I want people to know my message, that I love myself and that I look just like the statue that was here.
Right.
People, the tourists didn't understand why I was there first. They didn't realize the statue had been there. So I explained to them the whole situation, and they were just so happy that I was there. They were ecstatic, in fact. People from Ireland and Germany, Brazil, all over Asia, India, Japan, Korea, people from all over the place were coming up to me. And then also the older gay male residents of Castro. Mm-hmm. We're walking by and saying very supportive things to me, like sort of whispering to me as they went by, we're so glad you're here.
Wow.
And where they would stop and they would take very intimate photos with me, like of my face smiling or something like that. And
mm-hmm.
There's one fella who, he was very sweet to me and he hung out with me for a bit. It really helped me relax too. I sort of forgot, in a way, sometimes that I was naked,
yeah,
right. Which is really strange. I know, it's very strange. And I was just, you know, hanging out on the street, talking. But, overall, it was a very, very positive experience.
Right.
And actually, it really, I had been very afraid. And then afterwards, I was not as afraid. Which was a very good result.
Right, right. So how did you feel when you left that day? Like, after it was all over, after you had spent the day out there, how did you feel?
I felt really great. I felt like I had pushed back against something that had harmed me, and I'd done something positive, mm-hmm. you know? I'm somebody who has a hard time going to protests, like street actions and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has to do with being trans, because the thought of going into custody is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the body that I have and the legal papers that, you know, there's often trans people have kind of a mixture of legal papers, you know, our birth certificate will say one thing,
right.
Our state ID will say another. So, you know, it's so terrifying to think, like, what would they do with me if they took me into custody?
Right.
Like,
right.
Who would frisk me even, or what cell would I go in? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I mean, the trans people who are in prison are just, it's inhumane how they're being treated.
Yes, absolutely.
So, So here I am, and I'm, you know, I can't really go to street protests, or at least that's how that's my life, mm-hmm. right? I certainly appreciate people who do, though, who put their bodies on the line like that, in
right,
that way.
Absolutely.
Like Black Lives Matter, for instance. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to do everything else that I can in supporting them, because I completely agree with what they're doing.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm not against, you know, that sort of direct action that is very loud and takes to the streets and blocks things. But me, as the person I am, and with my history and whatnot, this was what I could do.
Right.
Right. So I felt like I needed to do what I could do.
Yeah.
And I felt pretty powerful after that.
Yeah.
I didn't know if anybody would actually know about my protest afterwards. Mm-hmm. But I felt good in having just done it myself.
Right.
And I talked to people on the BART about it, and there's just been a lot of crying.
Yeah,
I will just say that. There's just been a lot of crying all throughout. I had a really good conversation with somebody on the BART too, and we talked about, very intimately about what I had just done, and she was really supportive. She was actually the perfect person for me to talk about, to talk about the stuff with and to sort of decompress. Mm-hmm. She was great. And then, then I just went about my business, and I went back the next day, and the next day was a Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, it's less of a party kind of scene in the Castro. There's,
right.
There's usually some naked men in the Castro. They usually have some tape around their genitalia, and you can often see them around, or like a sequin sock or something like that.
Right.
But Mondays are a much quieter day. Mm-hmm. And actually, when things are more quiet, that's when things can get a little more dangerous.
Right, right.
Somebody did show up early on in the day when I was out there. Each day I was out there for about 3 hours, and I went out four different times, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So this next day was a Monday, and so there weren't a lot of just regular Castro people, and there weren't a lot of tourists about, not like on a weekend. And this fella came up to me, and he was super upset that I was out there. He was like, "You're not supposed to be out here naked." And he kept running up to me and kind of running away. And
wow.
He, from my perspective, he looked like a well-to-do older gay man. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what his history is, but that was my perception of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, so I was actually a little bit afraid of this guy, because he, at some point, he ran up to me, and then he actually looked down at my genitalia, and he said, "You have no penis." Like, he just kind of yelled that out.
Wow.
You know, and I was like, "Yes, that's true.
Thank you."
You know, have a nice day.
Right.
You know, I tried to be as polite to him as possible and say, you know, it's okay. I mean, I'm just here to do a performance piece, and, you know, I have a right to be here. The statues were here, so I have a right to be here. Eventually, a community police officer showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the police are sort of trained to be really harsh in their words and in the energy that they put behind their words.
Yeah.
So that they can scare you.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Scare you into compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly felt that, right? In fact, it kind of made me shudder. And this was a relatively nice fellow, and he was probably even gay, and, you know, he kind of looked like Robin Williams. I don't know. He just didn't, he, you know, he wasn't very intimidating.
Right.
He was on a bicycle, and he was wearing shorts, you know. He immediately intimidated me. And
right.
So I said, "Well, I understand that, sir. You know, I understand that, you know, if people make a complaint, you have to say something to me. But I also have a right to be here. I'm an artist, and this is a performance art piece. And I'm here because the Trump statue was here. It was here for an entire day. Scott Wiener, you know, the local politician, made sure that it was here a day,
yeah.
an entire day. Whereas in other cities, it was taken away very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, the statues were taken down within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is my queer community, and I'm a queer person, and I get to be here. And he understood it, actually. He, you know, we just talked for a while, and at the end of that conversation, he said that he would give me as much time as possible, as much time as he possibly could.
Right.
So in some ways, I feel like I won him over.
Right, yeah, it sounds and, like
it. Yeah, I was amazed by that, actually. And he gave me at least an hour and a half
mm-hmm.
to continue on with my protest. And then he showed up again. And actually, that same guy, he kept kind of hovering about and saying bad things to me and whatnot. And then he showed up again, and he once again tried to intimidate me, but he said, oh, I just have to tell you this. The regular police are coming and blah, blah, blah. So this is how it's going to go down and, you know, whatnot. And then, the guy who had been harassing me came by again, and he started complaining really loudly to the police officer, and the police officer told him, this man is doing a protest and performance art piece, and he gets to do that.
Wow.
And he escorted the guy away.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty good. Then the regular police came after a few minutes, and a couple of female police officers were in front of me talking to me. I think that was probably done on purpose because of who I am, right?
Right?
And being what people, quote unquote, would call a female-bodied person, mm-hmm. which is not entirely true. I have a mix of characteristics, but
right.
It's probably a softer approach to have these women talk to me,
mm-hmm.
which actually I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to them for a while. I think one of them was actually a fat butch dyke.
Wow.
Yep. And she was wearing sunglasses, though. It's hard to meet people's eyes when they wear sunglasses. And
right.
I think they probably do that on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because it really, your eyes are your, you know, for a lot of people, the window to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
For people who are blind, that's probably different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried very hard to meet these people's eyes and to bring the situation to a very calm level. Because
right.
once again, they tried very hard to just get me to comply right now. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
they were going to do bad things.
Right.
That was what they told me, basically. We're going to cite you, and if you don't sign the citation, and if you don't cover up, we're going to take you into custody. At this time, and throughout this conversation, I didn't know what was going on around me.
Right.
Apparently, there was 8 to 10 cops behind me. So they had really brought out a lot of police, and they were all gloved up and ready to take me in.
Wow.
So I'm talking to these two female police officers, and I said, okay, I understand what you're saying. I understand that there's been a complaint, just like I said to the community police officer. And I said, I would like an equal chance to be able to talk to you about my protest, though.
Right.
And I went into exquisite detail. And as I was going into the exquisite detail, I consciously tried to relax as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to really feel the message of my protest, which was love and love of myself. And I tried to emanate as much of that as possible and tried to have the police see me as a part of the city, as somebody who belongs in this community and whose message is important.
Right.
And that kind of worked as well. They let me stay out there talking to them, I think, for probably a good 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and 10-15 minutes. I mean, it was a while. I was trying as hard as possible to stay out there as long as possible, hoping to win them over, for one thing.
Right.
And also creating an opportunity so people could take pictures of me or could also rally behind what I was saying.
Right.
And people did too. It was really amazing. They, there were men who walked around the perimeter where the cops were. Two more male police officers at that point had stepped in, and they were kind of blocking the view of me, which is something that they do if you're somebody who's going to be taken into custody. Police will kind of form a wall around you to block. And so there were these really tall, very muscular male police officers who were kind of out there too. And so these gay men were walking by and saying, "We love you. We're glad you're here. We love your protest." You know, just walking by. I think they were doing it on purpose. They just kept walking around the perimeter. And then the most amazing thing happened. This is something that I'm going to remember, like, when I'm, you know, on my deathbed or something. There was, because I work with little dogs, and there was a gay man who purposefully walked his little tiny chihuahua, who is really old, and between the police officers and me, purposely making space between me and the police officers.
Wow.
And I thought it was one of the most beautiful pieces of civil disobedience I've ever witnessed.
Absolutely. That's incredible.
And he looked back at me and he gave me this huge, beautiful smile. And it really helped me. I really felt like my community was supporting me at that point.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. And, you know, I work with little dogs, so I was like, little dog is helping.
Yeah.
Eventually, when the police were there, I'd gotten to a point where I was so comfortable, actually, I started playing with the police a little bit. And I will say, I have to say this, because of all of the murders of Black people and the targeting of Black people and other people of color in our country, I had immense privilege in this situation. If I had been somebody else, somebody who did not look like most of the residents of this community, of that community, somebody who wasn't white, I'm sure that it would have been different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is actually, I have a little bit of guilt about that, but I also felt like, in a way, that I used my privilege to a really good end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is really important for white people to do if they do recognize that they have privilege, they need to use it in a way that is that promotes social justice. So,
exactly.
So here I was, and I was talking. I finally relaxed a bit. I actually felt very warm, and I started sort of playing with the police because I did not know how they wanted me to comply. I did want to comply with them because they were threatening to take me into custody. And so I said, "Well, can you show me what part of my body I need to cover up? Because there isn't actually anything exposed. Right. I don't have my genitalia exposed. I have a vulva area and that's very fat. I don't have anything actually sticking out." And I sort of ran my hand down my body and said, "Where could you look here and tell me what I should actually cover up?
Right.
I could put some tape down here. Could you maybe look and show me where I could put that?" And the main female police officer, she literally crossed her arms, looked up, and shook her head and said, "No, I'm not looking."
Wow.
and I said, "Well, you know, ma'am, I really do want to comply with you. I don't want you to take me into custody. I do want to comply with you. So, you know, just tell me what I need to do. Should I put some tape? If I put a line of tape down here, would that be okay?" She said, "Oh, yes, okay. But how are you going to get the tape? You're going to put your clothes on, right?" And I said, "Yes, of course. I'm going to put my clothes on. I want to comply with you. And then I will put some tape on, and I will continue my protest. And that was the decision that we came to, that I was going to put a line of tape somewhere down there.
Right.
And that I could continue my protest. And right. so, but I had to reiterate that I have a very large vulvar region, and there will be hair sticking out. There will be flesh sticking out. Is that okay? And they said yes.
Wow.
So I think they were relieved to not have to take a, you know, tackle a naked protester.
Right, right.
So they walked out off in a crowd, and I was like, I looked back and I was like, oh my goodness, there's so many of them just for me.
Right.
And just for perspective, just for some perspective there, I'm 5'2".
Wow.
So I'm a rather small person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then I met with somebody who had been taking photos of me, and we just started talking, you know, after I put my clothes on, we just started talking. She took some more photos of me. She said that she has some photos of me and the police interacting, and then we were just hanging out and talking about social justice, and then we just got burritos and hung out. And then the next weekend I went, by this time I'd been very, I'd put it out on social media more.
Right.
Somebody sent me a video that they had taken of me and some pictures, so I put those up online. There was some censorship of that, though, on Facebook. So someone was very kind and took my video and put it up on something called Wikimedia Commons.
Yes, I saw the link for that. I'm going to link to that Wikimedia Commons video so that everybody can see it.
So Facebook can't take that down.
Right.
You know, they can't censor that. So it's kind of a permanent link to it. So I'm glad. And so then by that time, you know, lots of people had heard about it. And, and then Facebook sent me an apology after a couple of days and saying that they had made a mistake by taking my video down and that it was reinstated. And then ever since then, I've just been trying to get media coverage. The East Bay Express did an amazing job. They interviewed me. The editor interviewed me. So we were talking about, so I'm just trying to get more media coverage. It's been a mixed bag. The SF Chronicle, some of the editors there are very behind the Trump statue and its message, actually. So there was a kind of a fluffy article that was written that quoted me from Twitter. The author did try to contact me. His name is C.W. Nevius. He used Twitter, and I had just gotten on Twitter that day or something, so
right.
I did not get his tweet. And so all he did was put, like, a quote from my Twitter feed up there, and then that was it. And then he interviewed Virgie Tovar, I believe
right.
her name is,
mm-hmm.
and stopped me there. And that was the bulk of the article. And basically they misconstrued what I said. I mean, he got some of it right. But then they went on to basically say that, get over it, it's just art. You know? And as somebody who is an artist, I took an affront to that because they brought up Robert Arneson's Moscone bust.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really famous and controversial sculpture made by Robert Arneson in 1981. And it is truly a piece of radical art. And everybody was pissed off about it when it was made.
Mm-hmm.
And so they likened that very famous sculpture to these Trump statues. But the thing is that the Arneson piece is truly radical art. What it did was... it explored the circumstances of Harvey Milk's and George Moscone's death
mm-hmm.
within the piece. So it explored that hatreds were brought up, that there was homophobia, that there were civil rights struggles going on, and this was the result, the death of two beloved San Franciscans.
Right.
Right. The Trump statues? No.
No, no.
There's no comparison there. It's like, it's more like an adolescent prank.
Right. Like there was no criticism of Trump's policies in that.
No. No, there was no criticism of anything except for
his body.
Let's shame bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And it has nothing to do with his ideas. It has nothing to do with anything except that there was a lot of hatred that was stirred up, right?
Right.
And I felt it. And lots of people who've contacted me felt it. Trans people, fat people, men, cisgendered men with small penises have contacted me, saying that my protest meant a lot to them. Straight women out in the world, you know, whose bodies are judged all the time, even if they're thin, even if they supposedly match some beauty standard that we currently have.
Right.
They have also been contacting me because everybody is affected by body shaming.
Absolutely.
Everybody. I was actually just talking to a young trans man earlier today, and he was saying that a lot of his friends were telling him to get over it, you know, that he was just being PC and, you know, to man up, basically, and that, you know, it's about free expression.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about free expression, though, is that it goes both ways.
Right.
So if people are going to put a message out into the world, especially one that is so harming, it's good to counter that.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to say how it harmed you.
Right.
And it's vulnerable, and people might not initially listen, but it's always good to state it. And if somebody, like I said earlier, tells you that something is harming them, it's good to listen to them. If you have a friendship with them and you don't, if you don't take their feelings into account, then you're basically denying their humanity when you do that.
Right.
And you know, if we're going to consider it art, art needs to be criticized.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, free expression, it goes both ways. If people are going to put a message out there, that message, we are allowed to criticize it.
Right.
You know, and in fact, it's appropriate. It's always appropriate to criticize anything that comes up. I mean, why not? I mean, that's one of the vulnerable and scary things about my being an artist is that I put so much effort into a piece, and I hope that people connect with it in some way.
Mm-hmm. I want to say thank you so much to Shane Brody for talking with me today. This was so inspiring and incredible, and I'm going to post photos and a link to the video of Shane's protest on thefatlip.com, so it will not get taken down. I'm also going to post links to Shane's social media so that you can follow him and learn more about him and what he's doing. And please, if you were touched by anything he said today, share Shane's story. It deserves so much more coverage than it has gotten so far. I also want to thank Star Crusher, who is responsible for all of the music that you hear on the Fat Lip. And actually, his new album, Goodbye Halcyon Days, is out, and it's so good, and I hope that you check it out. His Bandcamp is cstarcrusher.bandcamp.com. I'm going to post a link in the show notes, so make sure that you go check that out. Buy the album, and you won't regret it. And our Patreon patron for the week is Jennifer H. Jennifer is hysterical and one of the actual best people on the planet. And man, I wish I saw more of her. If you want to be a Patreon patron and have your name shouted out on the show, go to patreon.com/thefatlip and it'll show you how. And you can watch a little awkward video of me. Thanks for listening. I have to tell you, Shane, this is the best interview that I've done. Like,
really?
You're very, very good at this. I hope you do more of these because you give a great interview. And I feel so inspired from talking to you.
Well, thanks. I'm really nervous. That's part of this whole thing, right?
Right.
I'm step by step, I'm sort of getting over fears, or at least not quite getting over the fears, but like taking a chance anyway and just doing it and seeing what happens.